extra life.
Go ahead.
Better pass those around.
I got two full boxes. Do you think I need all these myself?
I don't know. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. It's 2:01 on Thursday, March 28th, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashus, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman. This is a siting workshop regarding applications, exhibits, and other documents as a part of the hearing process and application process itself. Again, this is a work session, but we do have six related cases, PU-18-399, PU-18-404, PU-18-405, PU-19-28, PU-19-29, and PU-19-85. It will be a conversation about process, and we can't talk about any specific case as a part of that, but just the general process itself, and that's what this is about. This is Commissioner Julie Fedorchek's portfolio, and she organized and spearheaded the workshop, so I'm going to just turn it over to her. Unless Commissioner Christman, I should ask, do you have any opening comments?
Thank you. I do not. Let's just move on, and a lot of people are here, and let's hear what they have to say.
All right.
Okay. Come on in, Todd. There's still room. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for being here. Yes, we have cookies because nobody said this has to be miserable. So we'll just pass them around. I've never really met a Girl Scout that I don't like, so I tend to overdo it on Girl Scout cookies. So you want to start those over there, and I've got another roll for here. thank you, first of all, everybody, for coming. The agenda that is passed out, these are, when you read them, and this is why I didn't have them sitting on the table, because I didn't want everybody getting high blood pressure before we even started. These are not things that the commission has already agreed and is implementing. These are just things that could be potential solutions for some of the challenges that we're seeing. And so the idea is to just talk about these. Randy and Brian and I haven't even agreed and decided, like, this is what we want to propose. So I did visit with staff, and these are some of the ideas that Alana, Jack, and Pat and I kind of came up with in terms of things that we should be talking about at this meeting. And so overall, the goal of this meeting is to make the process better for everybody. I don't think we've done a really outstanding job communicating what we're looking for in what formats, at what time. And so that sometimes creates frustrations for companies at the hearing. It creates frustration for us. It wastes time, which nobody wants to have happen. And so my goal with this discussion today is to come out with some things that we can implement that make it more clear for you guys what you need to file from the start so that our staff can get to work on it and so we can shorten the time frame that it takes once you guys file or think you've filed and we actually get a hearing date set. So that's one of the goals. And then provide a better, more constructive way for the public to testify and be involved in the process and shorten the hearings and a whole number of other things. So that's the goal, to try to improve the process. The last time, this is always a little bit difficult to have these kinds of workshops with how to do it best. But I think the last time we did this was the tree and shrub workshop, and some of you guys were here, but not all. And it ended up being kind of a free-for-all, and I'm hoping not to repeat that today. We ended up with a good product through the tree and shrub, but it wasn't the most efficient for everybody. So I'd like to, if we can, follow the agenda and not get off track, and hopefully we won't be guilty of that ourselves. And then if there's other things that we haven't discussed, we can certainly add them to the mix here. But to the extent that we can follow the order of things, I've tried to think of it in terms of from the beginning to the end of the process as well. So there's some logic to how I set these things up, whether it's your logic or not. That could be debated. So with that, if you guys are okay, we'll just dive in. Do you want to jump in, Randy?
One thing, and I was trying to mostly listen to you and trying to glance through this a little bit. I really don't see it addressed specifically, but the filing of this information is, I think, the most important topic. But to me, there's also another one developing, and that's just the time of the hearing. I'm curious as you address other things, but me not being a lawyer and having a bunch of them in the room, maybe I'll look like a fool after saying this, but my understanding of a courtroom situation isn't one where one side can come in and just filibuster the whole trial away and the other side doesn't hardly get a chance. It seems to me part of the pre-filing and stuff that there should be some kind of an estimate of how much time is going to be needed to present the case. And I know it's not going to be precise because you don't know what questions we might have, but it doesn't seem fair to people who come to the hearing to participate in it to not know whether this is like a two-hour hearing and they'll get a chance after that, or if it's going to be a 12 or 14-hour hearing. And it just seems like if there's a way that we can kind of get an assessment of that before is important. So I'm curious about thoughts on that from people who have legal experience.
And that is part of number five. Okay. So we'll just make sure that gets covered when we get down to that one. Alana, there should be maybe more. Okay, so with that, we'll just jump in to number two on the agenda, and that is creating a standardized list of documents needed by the commission prior to deeming an application complete. The commission is moving towards electronic filing. I know you've heard us say this for a long time. It is coming, hopefully within this year. Once we get to that point, then the computer will say whether your application is complete or not. And so, and if it isn't, you won't get to say to your boss, file that application, because it won't be here yet. So in preparation for that, we think it would be helpful to come up with kind of the same type of a list that the computer will be using and grading you on, whether we have everything we need or not. And so Pat and his team have put together a very preliminary list. We aren't going to go through this list today, but we'll talk about the concept, get concerns from you guys, and then we'll give you a draft list here of what it might look like, and then we can get your feedback after the you can let us know if you have issues with this once you've had time to fully absorb it. But the idea would be somehow you guys would indicate either there would be a letter on top of your application showing all of this stuff, you've checked off that all of this stuff is included, so we know that you believe that you have it, and then we would look at that and be able to say in a much shorter time period, the application is complete and we can put it on the schedule for a hearing. So that's kind of the concept, and I'd be open to any thoughts or concerns from anybody on that or questions. If you have concerns, please share them so that we don't go down this path and miss something important. I mean, you can even speak from their seats.
And I don't know if it was really emphasized. It's not just the people at the table that we want to hear from. We're trying to learn here, so somebody's going to have to break the ice on one of these points for us to really benefit from
this. Yeah, we don't
have
a table big enough for everybody. Does it make sense conceptually?
Yeah, we're just chatting, just to be sure the list that you presented here is what, if everybody agreed to it, is what would be required regardless of the type of project. If this would be your list, or is there some things that are optional? Or
if you see that if there's something on that list that you don't think would apply in certain circumstances, you should let us know and say this would be difficult or challenging or whatever. This is generally what we already are receiving from you all. It's just that maybe sometimes one company might forget a couple of things, or you know, that's just and so staff spends a fair amount of time going through trying to look for the stuff and finding it. Ideally, I think it would be helpful if the list that the cover sheet tells us where it is in the application, then it would be even more seamless from our staff standpoint.
final comment, we've observed that there hasn't been much of a document distinction between, I'll be specific, with a pipeline that's going to be constructed or hopefully to be constructed versus one that's going under undergoing a conversion project. And so things like a stormwater pollution prevention plan is specific to construction. So if you're looking at converting a line in the ground that's constructed and in place, there's a number of the documents on the list that are specific to construction mm-hmm. would be irrelevant. And so there might be an option for a different list for a conversion project mm-hmm. versus a new construction project.
I don't know.
It's people to identify themselves.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Will you all, if before you speak, just identify yourself too? That'd be great. Mitch? Oh.
Sure. I mean, like, we file stuff electronically all the time in courts or whatever, and certain things are required. You know, what I would suggest, like, for that is, you know, if there's something on the list that's not applicable, file something saying, you know, whatever stormwater plan, and say, stormwater plan is not applicable for this project because X, X, and X. Because for staff, that helps us because we can say, okay, they're saying it's not applicable. I mean, it gets us to our attention. And we can say, yeah, well, right, it looks like it's not applicable, or wait a minute, yeah, it looks like it is. And that would help us determine whether the application's complete on the front end. If instead of it not being present, if it just says it doesn't apply, then we can evaluate that on the front mm-hmm. end.
Okay, point. Any other thoughts? Okay. Well, again, let us know as you absorb it, and let us know if you have suggestions for improving it, but... once we get down the path, we'll probably be implementing this, you know, as soon as we can after the workshop, after we've allowed enough time for you guys to absorb it and get back to us. Randy, Brian, anything on that issue you want to talk about more?
Number two?
Yep, on the list. Or Pat? Nope, you're good? Anything else you want to talk about on number two?
One of the comments I guess I would make is if there's a conversion of an existing pipeline, if we're going to be designating a corridor, some of the things that you might not think apply to the existing pipeline might apply to the corridor that you're asking the commission to designate. So that's something else to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the comments like Mitch is asking for might be facilitate a discussion. Which actually leads well to number three, which is encouraging more conversations between the company and PSC staff regarding filings, changes, advance notices, et cetera. So I know that with email and texting and mail, there gets to be a lot of messaging and conversations going on. We get a lot of stuff just arriving in the mail without a lot of context. And so... I think what we're saying to everybody is if you have stuff that you're coming or you've got a change you want to file or you want to, having a call, quick call to our staff person who's handling who you're working with or to Pat to give him a heads up, that's really helpful. And we would want to encourage that. If we've discouraged that in the past, then shame on us. But we want to encourage that kind of conversation and heads up so that we can flag things out of the big piles of stuff that we're getting and give it the attention that it needs. And that's especially important as we get closer and closer to hearing dates. If something new is coming, let us know so it doesn't sit here for a few days before it even gets docketed and distributed, et cetera. So is there any impediments that you guys are finding to communicating with staff and the PSC? That would prohibit you or that we should know about that we can eliminate those kind of barriers? Okay, good. Well, then, we'll expect to hear from you.
But just to emphasize, you know, if this ends up being kind of the way we move forward, if it does turn out that it's problematic, you just got to let us know.
Yeah. absolutely. And if you're not, also I would say, and this is not to, you know, go around staff, we want you to go through the staff, and we can't always talk about things in advance, but if it's becoming a trend or if you're having a problem getting information looked at, we don't have to get into the merits of the case. You can just say, where's, you know, I haven't heard about such and such, or I'm waiting to hear back from staff. Let it. I would like to know that. I would really like to know those sorts of things. So,
Julie, mm-hmm. One other thing I'd say. I mean, the only thing that I've sometimes seen, and I don't think it's with the people in this room, but a lot of times, like, when we get involved, companies sometimes have the feeling that they need to go through the attorneys to talk to staff, and I don't necessarily view that as the case. I mean, so, like, if, you know, I might be in a trial or something, and, mm-hmm. and I can't get back to somebody, I would just emphasize that if you can't get a hold of the lawyer, you can still call Jerry or Pat or Victor, whoever's on the case.
Yeah, that's a good point. And especially if things are time-sensitive. Okay. All righty. Number four is a drop-dead date for filing projects changes prior to the hearing. So that might not be the best way to summarize this, but we frequently deem applications complete pending X, Y, and Z, arriving 30 days before the hearing date. And I felt like we were holding firm to that 30 days, but I've heard that maybe that's not been happening, and I think that there's a strong desire amongst the three of us to begin holding that firm. So one of the things that might be confusing is we say in pending the filing of X, Y, and Z maps, and so those arrive and everybody's good to go. Well, then other stuff arrives, and we aren't expecting that. We think the maps are it, and maybe the companies are thinking, well, we got the maps in, but we also have all this other stuff, so we're going to get that in too. So I think what I'd like to talk about is we want everything in by that 30 days, and that's so that the people who are interested in these projects can look on our website and see the information themselves too. So holding firm to those kinds of dates, what kind of challenges do you guys anticipate with that? And what do you want us to be aware of?
And before they answer, can I just add something Absolutely. From my own perspective? Having everything in by a date firm, I don't know how to really define some of these things, but to me there's a big difference between everything being in and then a few days before the hearing, all of a sudden we've got a whole new map it just almost is unrecognizable, as opposed to you get almost everything in and then a couple days before you find out that there's a cultural resource somewhere that was previously undiscovered and so now there's a little alteration or one tower's being moved or you've picked up another easement or something like that. A little alteration to me is one thing, but when it takes binders of information, then to me our previous application just wasn't the right application. So,
right, and I not to overemphasize that, but well, probably is to overemphasize it, frankly, because I can think of the last, or not the last, but one of the a hearing recently. The project footprint area changed, and we had public members from the public coming in talking about what they thought it was, and it had changed. So then they're literally providing testimony and getting I didn't realize that. And that's a real simplistic example, but we're trying to do a really good job on our end too. And frankly, when things are coming in late or they're changing, and it's not just one case you're dealing with at any given time. I rattled off six, not to mention things we've got on the rate side of the equation. And we want to do a good job on behalf of the citizens, the company involved, et cetera. So, yeah, just as an element of fairness, but also so we can be thorough and we're doing our job to the best of our ability. So I think the deadline's the deadline. And if the deadline doesn't work, then we have to look at shifting the hearing date back.
And if there is stuff that needs to come in and you're having conversations with the staff, then that can be, you know, that's another avenue where you can say, like, well, this is kind of a small thing, and but we're sending it, then we've got the alert, and we can, staff can determine if it is a small thing or if it isn't, you know.
And we have to do the right things, of course, on our end as well, realizing that.
This seems like it's, well, it's it might be a significant issue with the pipelines, too, but it seems like the wind facilities are, there's so many moving parts always, even after the hearings, with turbine sizes and where they're going to be, and, you know, a lot of that stuff isn't set, and so the locations are changing constantly. So I just know that's a challenge, and I don't know exactly how best to deal with it. So does 30 days on wind projects, is that, can we expect that we're going to have kind of a final site plan 30 days, or what do we need to be prepared for that with those projects? Wait, I know you do a fair number of the winds hearings. Who else? You guys have...
I think pipeline and power line, too, though. That's where it's popped up more recently, but I'm curious if the other projects, if this would be seen as a problem.
Like you said, there are a lot of moving parts, and there's occasions where you might be at the mercy of, you know, whether it be another agency or whatnot, and, you know, you'll have what you think is a, you know, everything submitted 30 days in advance, but for whatever reason, whether you were waiting on something from another agency or something, you know, something changes. And like you said, when you're talking about arrays and wind farms or things like that, it can cause, you know, a lot of things to change and then studies to be updated and, you know, try to supplement. And there's a lot of deadlines, you know, it takes a long time to construct these things. And if you can't, and if you would have to reschedule your hearing because you didn't meet the 3-day deadline, then you're looking at, you know, depending on people's schedules, you could be looking at another couple of months before you can get your hearing. So,
right.
I mean, I think do their best, obviously, to meet 30-day deadlines, but there's sometimes unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah.
We've had challenges just with in trying to advise the BSC commissioners as to kind of the biological impact. You know, we need some time to take a look at kind of the full package and analyze it and break it down, and it's been difficult to do that when pieces are coming in, and especially right before a hearing, we're unable to react and provide a full, you know, our advice and evaluation of the project. So I know that's something that we came to the meeting with, is when we need to have a longer period of time to really be able to analyze some of this. It's a lot of information. We just have a small staff and don't have the ability to, in a week's time to be able to turn stuff around like that.
Right. Did you have something?
I guess I was just thinking, from the aspect of the companies put everything in. I've been in hearings where there's been individuals from the community who have come forth and brought issues to light that we didn't know about in the application, and that did end up altering the layout of the project. So are we going to, I guess if we're requiring everyone to come 30 days ahead of time with their comments, how does that apply to the public?
Well, that wouldn't apply to the public because the public's opportunity is really at the hearing. So I would think of them as a separate category. And I don't know that it necessarily would apply to the agencies either. I think everybody else is responding to what the company is filing 30 days ahead of time.
And I mean, I couldn't even tell you the number of siting hearings we had, but I was just asking Brian and Sarah if on any of them there weren't some changes at the end, and there's always some changes, you know, some level of materiality or whatever, and, you know, we usually handle that, you know, through either the certification provisions, getting them on the record saying, look, we'll comply with this, we'll comply with this, we'll run it by Game and Fish, we'll run it by SHPO, you know, so I struggle with, you know, whether a 30-day deadline is, unless it is just, it's drop dead. I mean, I think we're still going to run into those small changes at the end either way, and I'm assuming that there's some sort of materiality portion of it, I assume, but.
I feel like there, you know, it would have to be substantial changes to what they're presenting to change the hearing date.
You know, because we schedule hearings, you know, within 30, 35 days,
yeah.
You know, whatever. I mean, we always try to add an extra week on there for some cushion for the statutory timeline, but sometimes the hearing gets scheduled and it's only a month out from there.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me for reference frame, when I say a long time, I'm talking about just a little over 6 years, but it seems like we did a lot of this stuff and it wasn't really a problem until maybe the last 12 to 18 months, and it's just been getting more and more. And my concern isn't, with due respect to Greg, but not so much the agencies or even us. I mean, it's a big inconvenience for us, but we have staff and we can, you know, you find a way to work through things. But I don't know how we really say we're having public hearings when the public looks at things for weeks or in some cases months on our website and thinks they understand what the project is and prepares for the public hearing and comes and finds out that that's really not the application. That's significantly changed. And the public needs to be able to view these things for a fair period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an opportunity for an entity, because you kind of said it with substantive changes, to file some sort of a substantive change alert that could be filed publicly so that anybody who is tracking these hearings and is preparing as a member of the public for what could be a very real problem when it may no longer affect them, then they would have the opportunity to see that on their website and know, oh, there could be something here, and then I'm going to need to be tracking this and understand the hearing date could be changed, or I need to dig in a little deeper because it may no longer affect me.
It's a good idea. Any problems with alerting? I mean, because, yeah, you look at a website and you can't tell one thing from the next. It's
no.
I mean, like highlighting it, in a sense, a change order almost, in effect.
Right on the schedule online, too, yeah. Just letting it. All of us know because that's where we go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's doable. But we do, I think we also kind of, this is Alana, sorry, rely on the company to give us that heads up in the filing, too, in case staff doesn't get to it that immediate day and it's going online. It would be nice to get the heads up and then you could push the button so everybody else gets the heads up and reads it more thoroughly, too.
Okay. I think you'd want to be very careful having a hard and fast rule that any filing less than 30 days before the hearing date results in a continued
right.
hearing. I mean, that's just bizarre. It's not, you're going to have exception after exception. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe adopt a policy where the commission says we may, if there's a substantive change, continue the hearing. And you're going to have to rely on your staff to bring it to you and say there is a substantive
right.
change here. You need to extend the hearing date. I mean, that lets applicants know, okay, if you file something less than 30 days before, you're running the risk it could continue the hearing date. So you just got to take it into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But things like, you know, the certification, when that gets filed depends on when we get it from staff. And those things are always filed almost at the last minute. And,
yeah,
and so you just can't have a hard and fast rule saying no filing less than 30 days before.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, our pre-hearing deadline, if you will, for getting the certification out the companies, we usually send it 2 weeks before the hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, we can move that up if necessary.
I don't think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I think this is more like project descriptions, you know, and things that the public, location of infrastructure and
yeah.
study impact.
Saying, you might have, if you're a pipeline and if you're also working a Forest Service issue at the same time because you need the Forest Service permit, you might have a change that's required from the Forest Service.
Yep.
So, you know, but maybe it doesn't affect anybody at the Forest Service.
Right.
And so if we file a change and it's just on Forest Service lands, affects the Forest Service permit, does that really deserve to continue mm-hmm. the entire hearing when it doesn't have any effect off Forest Service land?
Yeah.
There are thousands of other exceptions like that you can come up with. But be careful about a hard and fast rule.
I think
it's
that's
easy, but
hard and fast rules are best left just to organ playing, right, John?
That's right.
It seems to me, seems, you know, we publish the notice, and we're required to publish a map with it. If something gets filed that changes that map, I mean, that's something that I would bring up as a potential issue. I mean, particularly if it enlarges it, if it shrinks it and everything's included,
yeah,
you're probably still covered. But, you know, if it really changes the nature of that publication map, then you probably have a issue to deal with legal anyway. But I've never seen one that changes it that way. I mean, usually but I would say the big changes we've seen are maybe, you know, you're having public opposition and the wind farm went from this big now to this big because of things. But
yep.
There is a significant change that compromises either the public's ability to provide input or the 27 agencies that we work with to provide meaningful input. I think companies, at least in my opinion, should be forewarned that the hearing may be pushed back because everyone has to have a fair shot at this. And that's a tough thing, at least for myself personally, to try and be the judge of, well, you know, is 11 days with a significant change enough for everyone to adequately weigh in? Otherwise, it seems like we're going through the hearing process, and it just doesn't seem like it's the level of thoroughness it's not as thorough as it needs to be, and that's I will point out that concern for myself personally.
Well, I think if we just everyone is aware that this is a concern of ours, we want to keep the changes as minimal as possible, and we also want the consulting agencies that we rely on to provide input to have adequate time to look at their materials and studies and comment as well. So I think it's best for everyone. So, do you have something to add?
Well, just based on that last little part of the conversation, I think the input agencies need to recognize that they can say this is something that is, you know, substantial to us, and we can't have meaningful input in the 5 days or whatever, that they're free to submit something like that so that the commission, so that something is triggered for the commission to consider. There is an existing rule that says if the application changes enough, I don't know the exact words, the hearing, they can consider it a new application and have a new process and change the hearing. So that rule exists. It's discretionary. But I think in the conversation, the companies should be sure to point things out and not hide them sort of by burying it in the filing and not mentioning it. And the input agency should know they're free to say, we don't have enough time now.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Yes. Bill McCarthy, I could see going forward with an application knowing you have some potential changes that would breach this critical level, and maybe you go through the process and then shortly after file an amendment then. That'd be one way a company could address that if they had those issues pending to preserve their schedule, get some of it approved, and then go forward. So, I mean, that's talking, you know, responding to kind of John's comment, you know, kind mm-hmm. of those outcomes, if you're not trying to think it all the way through what could happen with these hard, fast dates.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope nobody leaves here thinking we are talking hard, fast dates. I mean, I think we're talking hard, fast dates for substantive changes, but not for minor changes. And I think a vast majority of the stuff that I've seen over the last 6 years has been minor changes. And I think that we just need to trigger those conversations with staff more when things are coming in after that deadline so that it's not a surprise and a frustration point at the hearing that there's been significant changes. All right. number five, this is something that I think that our attorneys have talked quite a lot about. I've heard from Zach Pelham, who couldn't be here, but he does a lot of our cases, and he has, you know, strongly urged that we start doing mandatory pre-hearing conferences with the ALJ and parties to discuss scheduling exhibits, the hearing schedule, like Randy, you were talking about, talking through, you know, how much time the company might need for their witnesses, all of these sorts of things. So I don't think that's a crazy new invention. I think you guys do that all the time in other venues. So does anyone have any things that we ought to be thinking about in that regard or concerns? Would you like to see it? Any issues with that at all? Okay. So I see Tim back there. Tim? I guess I don't have strong feeling about how long in advance. Maybe, Mitch, you have thoughts? Or
well, I suppose I always Jack? Have thoughts. I'll just, my first thought, and I hate to be a naysayer, but I don't like pre-hearing conferences, but they are helpful probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when we do this, and it's not always stuff that comes back that you see, but I mean, we, at least in my experience, we typically do have an exhibit list between the company's lawyer and us, at least going into a hearing, so that when we get there, we can say, look, can we just stipulate to these versus the process? Now, maybe it's just taking that process a step further and saying, hey, file your exhibit list and file your witness list versus just working on it with mm-hmm. staff. Because I mean, I usually know what witnesses are coming before I go to the hearing. It helps my prep, and it also, and I usually know what the exhibits are, and I can write on mine so that I can at least, you know, not have to be scrambling for exhibit numbers to make the record complete. My suggestion would be if there is a pre-hearing conference, a better time to do it probably is, you know, in that 2 weeks to 30 days before the hearing, closer to the hearing, because it'll be more productive. If we have it a month and a half before the hearing, we're going to sit there and talk about what everybody thinks the exhibits might be or who mm-hmm. the witnesses might be, and then it'll be completely different by the time we get there.
Okay. Well, I think that that number 5 and 6 kind of work together, with the exception of estimating the time needed for the company, which we can talk about. But the last hearing, when we came, we had all of our binders, et cetera, and then the company had full binders with exhibits for us too. So we each had 4 binders this thick for the hearing, plus other stuff. And so it was a lot of trees killed for duplicative information. And then it's also really difficult for us to figure out 5 minutes before the hearing what we're going to use, which exhibits we're going to use, and how to find our notes and the ones that we brought versus the new ones, et cetera. It's just so I guess for us it would be really helpful to have the exhibit list identified to the docket filings, so we know which docket filings we need to take to the hearing, and then have anything new that comes in the hearings. You know, you can, I've seen like some attorneys even label those too, like exhibits, and then just have those separate, that something that's new at the hearing, but not refiling everything, just having one copy for the record. That's all that you need to bring, one copy for the judge to take, and then everything else could be referenced in the exhibit list 2 weeks ahead or 7 days ahead, whatever we decide, and then we'll, it saves a lot of hassle for you guys having to make all those extra copies as well and dragging them all to the hearings.
That's actually a question I get asked a lot. I don't know about Brian. Is there, you know, should we bring copies for the commissioners? And honestly, a lot of that might frankly be our fault, because it's like, I think they'll have everything, but I don't know, you know. So I think some of that would fall on PSC staff counsel.
Okay.
What I've started telling them, you know, after having several hearings with you three anyway, is they appear to bring everything with them. You know, bring a copy for the originals for the judge, and I say I always think it's a good idea to have an additional copy for the public if they need to page through it. Anything that's on the docket, I usually tell them they probably don't need to bring another copy of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was glad we were having this meeting so I could confirm with you three, I guess, if it's on the docket, you don't need another copy, so I know I can tell them that.
I personally don't, unless it's changed. If it's something new, then obviously.
Yeah, so I would say if it's on the docket, I mean, we still need to enter it, but reference a docket number in the exhibit list, and then, but if you have a new exhibit, then everybody's going to need a copy at the hearing.
Yeah, otherwise I would concur. I would say please don't. I brought back two boxes, and I only went with one last time.
And it wasn't Christmas?
And it was, well, it got to the point, too, where, well, Tim, you were going through the same thing, I believe, at times, where, okay, which binder are we in? This is the new binder, not the old binder. And it literally, it slowed things down. Plus, like you mentioned, killing how many trees in the process?
Yeah.
But the exhibit list is crucial. Because ahead of time, because commissioners and staff need to know what items you think you're introducing to know what to bring. Yeah.
And
look up.
I'm sorry.
Now you said, or look up, you know, electronically.
So, but to me, it begs the question, Mitch, if I caught your numbers right, you said that a month and a half was just too far ahead to be useful. I think you said 2 weeks or a month ahead was more recommended. I'm curious what people think is the right time, because, frankly, the more time we have it, the more thorough we can be, but also the more fair it is to the public and to the agencies that are expected to make comments, too. So I'm curious what people think is a reasonable time.
Yeah, and all I know is for the lawyers who, I mean, we're used to dealing with this, like courts and stuff. I mean, if I get an exhibit list or witness list, you know, 3 or 4 days in advance, that's enough time for me, but it may not be enough time for everybody, you know. So what I always think is I'd like the exhibit list when it's final. You know, if you get one 4 weeks before and then you add it and amend it and then you add it and amend it as you get closer, you know, that just makes it more confusing to me. At least I think it does for the public, but I don't know. I think the commission would be in a better spot of knowing necessarily what the public thinks about, you know, when they start looking at these cases before they show up for them. But I think usually 2 weeks beforehand, they probably know, you know, at least 90% of the exhibits. And I think that's probably a pretty good time for exhibit lists.
Well, and the public will still have access to all the information. It's just whether it's going to be an exhibit or not. If it's been filed, you know, that's the 30 days, really.
The public's not going to keep going back and looking at this stuff. When we deem something complete, I think they're going to think it's complete. Sometime or another, these projects have to be settled on what the project's going to be. And it seems like once we deem it complete and then a few more weeks go by, unless people explain to me why not. It seems to me a couple weeks ahead of time should not be too much to have it.
And I tend to see what we see a lot, just as an example, is you'll have a pipeline, right, and it'll be deemed complete and there's a notice. And then usually somewhere in 2 weeks, 2 weeks after the notice that it's complete, you'll see, oh, we have a change for a landowner preference. Now, I've always assumed that was either the landowner saw the PSC notice, went and looked at it closer, decided to talk to the company, or the company was having discussions with the landowner before. I'm not sure which one, but usually that type of change comes from something that everybody wants or is at least agreeable to. So it's those changes, you know, I think there could be a concern with making those changes that people want because they don't want to push the hearing out, you know what I mean? So like this landowner might have 2 miles of pipeline running through there, but they just want it moved over 500 yards. And I worry that, and the company's like, yeah, that's fine, but if we move it, I'm worried that we're not going to have our hearing date or something. You know, that's the concern I would hope to avoid.
Yeah, we don't want that happening.
That's true for wind turbines, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think, I guess your first question was, what's a reasonable time? I think probably in that two-week range before hearing, I think everybody's really starting to, at least the companies are really starting to plan for the hearing. I think that's when you could probably have a at least pretty close to final exhibit list.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else thoughts on that? I think 2 weeks can work for me personally. Randy O'Brien, you guys have issues with 2 weeks on the exhibit list?
No.
I don't really.
Okay.
I'm just looking around the room here.
All right, so that takes care of number 6, and number 7. We're going to come back to number 5, though, and talk a little bit more about the estimated time needed for company witnesses. And that kind of blends with number 8 a little bit. We've bantered about in the past a little bit about having pre-filed testimony and not going through reading all the testimony. Now, in the pipeline hearings, you guys don't always read the testimony, but pretty much standard in the wind hearings, the companies are reading the testimony. And so that can extend the time pretty substantially. And I think it's time to entertain the idea of not doing that, having the pre-filed testimony here X number of days ahead of the hearing, and then the company provides a summarized presentation of that. Not nothing, but something that kind of generally gets the gist across so that the people at the hearing know what the company's proposing, but we aren't going through a line by line. Thoughts on that? And that's not something that Brandy, you and Brian, and I have really talked about, so I don't know if you guys have issues with that, but that would be one way to cut down on the time that the hearings take. It would be a way to also allow the public to testify sooner and spend less time, but also still get a good review of what the project is and what the company is proposing. And that testimony would be available on the website 2 weeks or whatever we decide ahead of time for people from the public to read and see exactly what it is the company's saying. Anybody concerned with that?
Yeah, I'm just curious, what does the pre-filed company testimony consist of? I know you mentioned it briefly, but what does it consist of in court generally?
Whatever your lawyer tells you, you gotta say.
Well, you know, usually.
Hopefully, the truth.
Well, yeah, you'd hope the lawyers are advising that.
I would say that probably we don't always have it pre-filed, but usually in the hearings, I mean, the company witnesses on direct are following some level of a script.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, right.
I mean, some of it is just reading, you know.
A lot of it is, yes.
That's kind of the answer to your question. I mean, the pre-filed testimony would be whatever they've got in front of them, where they've got the question, then they've got the answer. You know, that way everybody would see it beforehand.
You know,
go ahead.
I have some concerns about us as an agency saying what they may or may not do to make their case. Because I don't want to deny one of these and then have to say, well, they only gave us 2 hours. They wouldn't let us say this on the record. We sent it in on paper and we don't believe they ever read it or something like that. What I do want to know is, do you plan on talking 20 hours and just filibustering the day away and wearing everybody else out? Or is your case going to take 3 hours? I don't have such a strong objection to them presenting it however they want to, but I want to know in advance what kind of time frame they need.
And I don't know, I'm trying to remember, like, the longest direct examination I've seen of a witness, but usually the direct examinations aren't all that long. Usually it gets long when we have a bunch of questions, and then our questions generate some more questions from you, and then they've got to, I don't want to say recuperate them or go back and clear things up, and then we go through another round. I mean, I think usually the direct questioning is probably an hour or less for almost any witness I recall seeing.
I don't think that was the case real recently.
Yeah, I know there's outliers, but I mean, just in general, I'd be curious what the other lawyers thoughts are, but I think most of the directs are.
And I'm still working my way through
an hour.
Yeah. Got it very long in spots.
I mean, right? The ones where it's longer are the ones where there are issues to work through, and it's not like, I mean, if there's issues to work through, you kind of need the additional testimony too.
Right. But, well, I think that this would help us get to the issues faster.
Yeah.
You know. Not spend so much time on the stuff that
truly
aren't
pre-filed
issues.
Testimony.
Yeah.
Well, does anyone feel as if it would inhibit their ability to make their case if some of it was pre-filed?
Are you saying you want all testimony pre-filed? I mean, direct testimony pre-filed? Because I haven't done that for years.
Yeah.
You know, I frankly haven't.
Yeah.
You know, when you pre-file testimony, you're largely getting a document that the attorney has prepared.
Right.
You know, I think it's a lot more productive to have a witness on the stand and have the witness actually describe the exhibit that they prepared rather than read what the lawyer wants you to hear about the exhibit. And I don't think I've ever taken excessive time with my witnesses either. I mean, I know there are some differences of opinion how you handle the hearing. But, I mean, I'm looking at Bill and Kathy over there. They've never seen a script from me.
Well, sometimes it, I think we had one instance, well, not even think, I know, where it was a script, and it was just going back and forth, and we were watching them both turn their pages over one by one for well over an hour.
I mean, I think there's a mistake on their part, because they're losing you. I mean, you're, they're not presenting a very effective case when they're doing that. They're losing the people they're trying to play to, but that's the applicant's problem or the attorney's problem.
Yeah.
You know, the only time I've seen pre-filed direct testimony, then there is no presentation of that direct testimony. It's presented to the staff, it's presented to the commission. I'm not saying necessarily you, but when I've seen it. And then basically cross-examination takes place immediately thereafter. But I'm in the same situation as John. I've never had pre-filed testimony with the Public Service Commission.
And I don't think I've seen true pre-filed with a citing case.
No.
I mean, I've seen him read off a script on the stand, but I don't think I've seen actual, truly pre-filed testimony like we have in the rate case.
It used to be pretty common, particularly in rate cases. But
yeah.
Yeah, rate cases.
We still do
really
it.
Common.
And then, so for those who don't do rate cases, it is pre-filed. There'll be a responsive testimony. There could be a rebuttal testimony, all pre-filed, you know, for several months ahead of time. And then on the stand, they will adopt the testimony, the witness as their own, and summarize it. That would be additional, because often that goes a little bit off because it's been weeks or months since they wrote the testimony, and then subject to the cross-examination. You still can be on the witness stand for 2 hours, but you're not on for 4 hours because you don't go through that first booklet of it. So I don't know. We tend to think it might be helpful, and it might be helpful for the public. On the other hand, the public needs to understand that it's subject to being corrected. It's subject to being changed. If you've got a route change 2 days before, then whoever's been doing the environmental assessment is going to be talking about those other 2 miles. So, I don't know. Six of one, a half dozen of another, I guess. But we need your feedback.
Well, maybe the approach would be to say it's optional if you want to have that kind of a record that has the entire script sort of in it and, you know, that's very spelled out and you want that in the official record, then you can choose the option of having pre-filed testimony. If you want to have more of the give and take of, you know, truly just interviewing the witness on the spot and they're just answering spontaneously, that's, you know, your choice. But then I think what we're after ultimately is better understanding of how long the time so that we can appropriately accommodate public input. So maybe that all just comes back to the pre-hearing conference and there's
exactly
a discussion.
Pre-hearing conference.
Yeah.
And realizing that, you know, maybe your staff has to have some input at the pre-hearing conference on cross-examination. I mean, that's what's really taking a long time.
Yeah.
You can't really be putting it on the applicants if it's a
no, right. That's the theory, and if there's any other interested parties by that point in time.
Okay. All right. Is that good? Are you comfortable with the scheduling, Randy? That was one of your big concerns.
I think so, and just to we're not constraining them to presenting their direct testimony any way they want to, is what I'm hearing here, right? Because I think that would be a mistake.
Okay.
You know, one thing, too, you know, I know one of the concerns I think what I'm hearing is, you know, look, the company talks for 6 hours, and the public's got to sit there the whole time, and then by the time they get up, everybody feels like they're rushing through that. And I have seen in the past where at the beginning the ALJ will say, you know, raise your hands, who wants to testify? So you'll know at the beginning if you've got 10 public people or none, potentially, right? But then they'll also say something to the effect of, you know, we do want to hear from all of you. If this goes longer and you run into a scheduling difficulty, please talk to me during the first break, because we've worked in public witnesses more towards the beginning of the hearing when we've had to in the past. I mean, so we, you know, usually, I mean, the commission certainly isn't like, no, you have to wait to the end, and the company usually isn't like, no, you have to wait to the end. I mean, they usually, the the people there will accommodate a scheduling conflict, and sometimes the LJ will just say something too, like, look, we do want to hear from all of you, even if it's repetitive, but please don't come up and say the same thing the last person said. Just say, I agree with the previous witness, and that'll help.
I haven't heard anybody do that, actually, though, Mitch.
Maybe it's a long time ago.
Even though we ask them to all the time, it's always like, mine is very different.
Maybe it's changed. I haven't seen it happen in a while either.
I'm way smarter than the guy that just talks.
Because that's, I mean, a lot of, I mean, when you do have a lot of public people testifying, they are typically saying relatively the same things, but.
Yes. Yes.
But if they don't get to say it, I think when I compare where we're at with siting now compared to where I felt like we were at in 2013, I think the fact that the public has been able to come and talk to us in these hearings has done some to minimize what we termed, and many people termed, landowner fatigue that I felt was more severe 6 years ago than what it is now. And I agree with you. We've made accommodations for people sometimes to testify early, and I don't object to that. But it's not ideal to me either, in that then they testify on something, and that ends up being one of the things that got changed. The Forest Service land now is being crossed differently or something. And
yeah, and a lot of times, I mean, even, I know we talked about PFAL testimony, but a lot of times the public will come up and say, oh, I thought this was different, but now that I see what it is, I don't really have an objection to it. I mean, if you take out the case presented, you know, if you cut down the company's presentation, you might have that person up there complaining about something that really isn't relevant anymore, too.
Well, the public, we have to be, well, we have to be considerate for all, you know, in terms of time allowed for all parties, but especially the public. They don't do this very often. They, you know, for a lot of them, it's the first time they've ever stood up in front of the podium, and some are incredibly nervous, and you hate to stifle or limit them in any way, and even making them feel as if they're limited. But I like the one thought of breaking it up, because at the last, well, one of the last hearings, I'll just say, I had people from the public who literally said, boy, if I'd known it was going to take this long before I could say something, I would have been out, you know, taking care of chores or doing, or staying at work until at least noon or whatever it was. So, and I think, I don't know if we're on 9 or we're getting to 9 in terms of the approximate time for public input, but maybe a couple of shifts, you know, morning, you know, a late morning shift, and then, I don't know how that works in exactly, because it's just tough for people with their schedules. It really is. And if it's important, you could argue, well, they just need to be there and take time, but it's hard for some.
Do the applicants have issues with us establishing time in the middle of the hearing for public testimony, say from 11 till 12:30 or 12 to 1:30 or something like that?
But here's what I would say. I mean, just advising you, if we were at the hearing and I was asked that question, I would say, look, it's the applicant's burden of proof. It's no problem, but we would need for them to say that on the record, that, you know, look, it's okay with us if they go here first, you know. I mean,
can that be discussed at the pre-hearing, though, and established? Because then we could actually publicize that.
Yeah.
You know, and then the public would show up knowing,
or they'd
hear about it. You could
say something to the effect in the notice of saying, I won't be in the notice, but something before, and you'll say there will be an opportunity for public testimony at between 11 and 1, and then again at the end of the hearing, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that would be ideal if that's not going to, you know, raise a bunch of concerns. Jean?
Commissioner, is there, because my memory is going back to the glorious time of the Brady 1 and 2 hearing, so let's all lose those again. You were spared that.
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
Well, no, not that's part of the record, because those are not, then the company can't cross-examine them.
I mean, the public can submit comments, but they're not evidentiary at that point. They're just
what you would consider them.
Right.
The comments are put online and then brought up during the hearing, I mean, it would do one of two things. It would allow the public to realize that their comment is going to get addressed, and it could be addressed by, you know, one of somebody that's there rather than the public themselves. If you address it at that time, you may answer their questions, and they're not going to sit up there and just keep talking about it. You're not going to have a bunch of them saying the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, those online comments, they may not come into the record, but if we see them, we can ask
right.
the company
talk,
about them,
yeah.
and it doesn't necessarily have to be so-and-so said this. We can just say, yeah. what are you going to do about this?
Right, and I think that's what we try to tell the public, either by responding or by our brochures, and Stacy's nodding. We say, this is useful because it tells us things we need to look at or think about or work on, but if you really want it on the record, your statement, then please come to the hearing. We try to get that across. Same with the agencies.
I would just say, if you know, somebody's really nervous and they don't want to absolutely don't do that, that also gives them a different venue for voicing their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
When I often, at breaks in hearings, I often have people come up to me and say, do you know about this, Bob, you know, whatever, and they'll show me something. And if it's relevant, I mean, legally relevant, I'll ask a question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't ask every question somebody comes up and asks me to ask, but if it's legally relevant, I'll typically ask it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stacy.
I would just add that we usually do the news releases 2 weeks before the hearing in order to allow the weeklies time to get in. So if we were going to have a set time for public input, it'd be helpful to have that
mm-hmm.
2 weeks before when the news release goes out. If you do it shortly before
right.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of has to coincide with the pre-hearing conference.
The one thing, I mean, just as a matter of thought, the one thing I think you should consider, though, if that means then they won't show up and listen to anything and then just come
right.
in, you know, I mean, that's
I know,
the,
that's the trade-off.
That's one thing I worry about. The other thing is I think there's a distinction, and it gets back to that estimate of the time that's going to be needed on these cases. If we're, let's say we're talking about a case and the company thinks it's going to take 3.5 hours, I wouldn't, my own preference would not be to go 2 hours and then open it up for public comment and then another hour and a half. And because I do think that it is better for them to follow if it's within a reasonable and an expected time. But if it's going to be a 10-hour presentation and we're going to try and get it in one day, well, then, yeah, I think somewhere in the middle or early on we need to allow some opportunity. So I think this, for me, there's two different answers as to whether or not we should allow testimony, public testimony, in the middle of the
And, I don't know when each of you individually start looking at a hearing, but I think going into a hearing, I mean, from staff's attorney's perspective, I think we usually know when it's we expect it to be a long hearing versus when we expect it to be a relatively quick hearing. And maybe it might be a good practice even, you know, a week before the hearing for the attorney or staff to put a memo together for the commission to say, you know, some sort of memo if that's what you want. And, you know, look, we think, hey, just heads up, we think this is probably going to be a long hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might be better served to tell the hearing officer to make a statement at the beginning of every
yep.
hearing saying that ordinarily the applicant will proceed and then the public will be allowed to comment. But we may take a different approach and we'll let you know at 11 o'clock and then
mm-hmm.
you can monitor how the hearings go. The hearing officer can talk to the commission and see, yeah, it's going to be a long hearing. There's a lot of people here that want to testify. Let's let them go. If you said public testimony is allowed from 11 to 12:30 on some pipeline hearings, we'd all be sitting around for an hour after
yeah.
the hearing's over.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting to see if anybody goes up for that, you know, because I'm
yeah. not. No, you're
yeah,
right.
And if you do say that, I mean, then we got to stick
yep.
around.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, the just from experience, the hearings that are generating a lot of public input are the wind farms, and they tend to go all day. And
well, it could be a DAPL hearing.
It could be, with the exception of a big pipeline. But some of the smaller, you know, pipelines aren't just generating as much concern as the wind. But, you know, that's...
whatever's above ground tends to have longer hearings.
Yeah.
When did we get into public testimony at the Burke?
Five-ish.
Five-ish.
4:30,
four
and five, yeah.
And then it went till what, just about 10?
9:45.
Mm-hmm. So, Jean, I was able to participate in that. So,
I was going to say the big, maybe big's not good. The long pipelines or power lines tend to have more than one hearing, and so that does do a little bit to constrain the amount of public testimony that comes in, because the ones on one end go to their hearing and the ones on the other end come to theirs. The wind farms are congested usually into just one hearing.
So in terms of number nine, I think we might be best served by deciding at the pre-hearing conference whether or not it's going to be a long hearing and whether we even need to entertain setting up a time for public testimony.
Yeah, if you're asking my opinion on it, I would start trying to, you know, at the beginning of the hearing, having people see if they have scheduling issues first and then seeing if we can work through some of these problems just by more of a simple fix.
Yeah.
If we were to say something to the effect of, you know, there, you know, if we're able, we'll potentially take public testimony beginning at 11 o'clock without setting a range, to your point that, okay, now we're just going to wait for an hour, because if someone thinks, well, I've got between 11 and noon or 11 and 12:30, they might show up at noon because they'll think, you know, I can quick come over from lunch or whatever. And so that might help out a few people to get out if they have a conflict with the time.
The only problem with not ever setting a time in advance, if we know it's going to be a long hearing, is that most of these people don't live in the town where their hearing is. So they're driving in from out of town, so they can't just be like, oh, now they're here, I'm going to drive all the way home and then come all the way back again for, you know, 3 hours later or 5 hours later. So, and that's, again, only if we think it's going to be a long hearing, which probably are the exception, not the rule. I think you guys just need to talk about it and explore whether it makes sense to consider setting a time for public testimony.
Just for clarification, you were talking about you would set the time in the notice?
No.
Just
we would use
the press release.
Ideally, if we can, yeah.
But
not in
worded
the
carefully so it doesn't exclude people. I mean, that's what I had heard. How we say it will be important.
Right.
I think there's some value for the public to be there and to hear the testimony,
mm-hmm.
because some of their issues could be resolved through the testimony. So if you start setting a time and they miss that, now all of a sudden you've set aside time to address things that are a moot point by the time they get a chance to voice it. So
agreed. Yeah, we see that a lot.
There will be a significant amount of the people that will not spend their time listening to the case. They'll come in to talk and...
What an education they'll miss out on. Okay, that brings us up to number 10, which is probably not something we can do here, but one of our most beneficial tools for the hearings are the maps, where we can see kind of everything in visually, the setback distances, the exclusion avoidance areas. This is especially true of wind facilities because there's the issues of non-participating and participating landowners. And I think it's best to just direct companies to work closely with staff on that, and then staff, you need to work closely with us. But the frustration with those maps is that they aren't always very usable. Like, the colors are too close together. It might be gray and light blue, distinguishing between participating and non-participating. Or the dots for the houses are super tiny, and you can't tell, you can't see them. Or they're too close in color. And so, I mean, the simple little picky stuff, I realize that. I even hesitate to sit here and say it. But it's really hard to keep it all straight in the hearings if we can't just have it, like, if you're going to the trouble of making them, those things seem to me simple. Like, so if you're working with your companies and the guy who's making the map, just really emphasize that and hold them to high standards. Look at it and tell if you can see. Can you tell in a, you know, quick glimpse the information that we're trying to get from that map? And if you can't, then I would send it back, because it's just going to irritate us during the hearing and it's not going to do anybody any good. So, and that's usually the map that is required prior to the 30 days, and so that's the map that
the last one, Jerry and I kind of exchanged some comments a few days before the hearing. And anyway, if we could just keep working on that. Do you guys have any more thoughts on the maps?
I'll just elaborate to say that, you know, having many sections of land on one 8.5 by 11 map doesn't really tell a person much. They need to be either enough of them in small segments or fold out sheets that a person can really see that land and learn something of what the project is. In the case of a wind farm, for example, though, so then you end up with a pretty extensive set of maps. So you decide to move one wind turbine over 100 feet or to exclude one and make an alternate the new one that's going to be built. We don't need a whole another 100 pages of new maps. We just need something to show that there's a change on, you know, whatever page that is. And same with the pipelines, you know, if you decide to go a little further away from someone because it's the landowner preference. I don't remember what case it was early on when I was here. There was a big thing about going around somebody's scoria pit, so it didn't get in the way of them mining that. We don't need a whole new set of maps for that.
Any more maps, Brian?
No, couldn't agree more.
Picture's worth 1,000 words.
Yeah. Especially okay. For non-lawyers.
Yeah. Are there other issues that you all want to bring up that would be helpful for us to think about?
Hire good map makers.
I will say, if I could put in a plug again for the advanced communication, I see Greg here with Game and Fish, and that's been one issue where we've had a flurry of back and forth, literally hours before the hearing. So to the extent that the companies can work with those consulting agencies well in advance, that's going to be better for everybody so that they can get their input in and you can have the back and forth, and we can have some time to consider it too ahead of the hearing. We do have other tools we can use if we don't feel like we're getting what we need from the consulting agencies or, you know, getting enough reliable expertise to use to check the information that the company is providing. So I'm not opposed to using those tools if we can't get the agency consult. If I don't feel comfortable like we're getting a good give and take there, then we'll start looking at some other tools to get that, because I think it's important for us to feel like we have the, you know, a good record on which to base this stuff. So to the extent that you can work with those agencies and get the information back and forth and have some completion to that process prior to the hearings, it's going to be better for everybody. And then the agencies should do their best to show up if they have concerns that aren't resolved. Show up to the hearing so you can be cross-examined by the company, and then we have a full record. That's a big deal, too. So.
Yeah, I would say that, and again, I'm not a specific example, but if you're going to spend an hour and 15 minutes, or have an hour and 15 minutes, or whatever, you know, extend a period of time that you're going to have one of your witnesses at the stand, because you know you're going to have to make a case in a particular area, and that it impacts, or you know, an agency is going to want to weigh in, you know, that's a pretty strong indicator that, you know, the late filed exhibits could really slow things down. You know, if you spend that much time preparing, that's also a barometer, if you will, that things have to be timely.
Okay, anything else? Danette?
Is there an opportunity to provide comments?
Yep.
Yeah,
we should probably set that. Do you guys, Jack, Lana, what's reasonable? A couple weeks?
Well, what do they need?
Yeah. How much time do you need?
What do you think is a reasonable time?
I think a couple of weeks is probably quite fair, just to give us an opportunity to absorb and go back to our different teams.
Okay.
I mean, I realize this is legislature, too, and some of you have things that you're working on there, and it's a busy time for us. It's a busy time for you, too, so I don't have a strong deadline in
How
my
about,
mind.
Like,
I just don't want it to be, you know, 2 years from now, either. But.
April 15th? It's a little bit more than 2 weeks. It's a Monday. What was that?
So we can file our taxes.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we shoot for that April 15th if you have more things that we should think about or concerns?
How would you like them submitted?
To by letter or memo or email is fine. Yeah.
Filing. What's the filing email?
To Steve? The executive director.
Yeah. Secretary, yeah.
Yep, and then you could just reference citing workshop or something to that effect. John?
Just a quick point of clarification. This meeting was kind of advertised in 5 or 6 cases, including one that's next week. I mean, and what I'm picking up is there's really no substantive change, anything that affects the hearing next week. And I don't think that hearing has any of the issues we've been talking about today anyway. So,
yeah. I put the cases down in case something happened that might affect the procedure in some hearing that wasn't held yet, but I don't see for that hearing anyway.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming and taking
your
time. And you can have another Girl Scout cookie if you'd like. There's one more. There's one more sleeve.
Thanks for coming.